Welcome to the Squawker Talker. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and joining me today are three of the finest minds in the Squawker world, the Squawker sphere. I don't know what we're going to call it, but we're going to find a word someday. Dave O'Brien, Squawker Dave, is joining us. How are you doing, Dave?
The Squawk sphere.
The Squawk sphere. Absolutely.
I'm all right, mate. Yeah, good. Yeah, voice is going a little bit, but I hope it'll hold for the next 45 minutes.
We're not going to be going that long, but you know, keep going. You might need it for your job, so yeah, absolutely. Mohammed Butt is here again.
Hey, how you doing? I'm, you know, it's good to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to have you. And Greg Stobart is here as well.
I am indeed.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Greg Johnson. And today we're going to be talking. Obviously, it's deadline day eve, so we're talking about the latest in the transfers and the transfer market. What's going to happen before the window slams shut? We're also going to talk about Big Sam. He's announced his first squad. He's made some interesting moves on and off the field already. First impressions and what they mean for England. And we're going to end talking about the sad old story of Jack Wilshere. What's happened? Where he's going? All that kind of thing. But anyway, just without further ado, we'll begin with the transfers and what's happening, what's going off everywhere. Stobes, it seems like Spurs, they're going off on one again.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? You asked me last week, I think, Greg, you said, why aren't more clubs following Man United's lead in terms of getting their business done early? And I think we're seeing classic Tottenham here, aren't we? With Daniel Levy meddling in the last week of the window for no reason. You've got Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola sitting there pretty comfortable having built their squads. And you've got Tottenham, this might be out of date by the time listeners hear it, but you've got Tottenham scrambling around. They bid $21 million for Wilfried Zaha on Tuesday. It sounds like Palace have no intention whatsoever of selling him. So Spurs have turned to a completely different player in Moussa Sissoko, which may well happen. I think $20 million, a deal including Tom Carroll for that one, which makes no sense whatsoever for Tottenham. But they're desperately trying to add some pace to the squad, but really weird when they're selling Bentaleb and Shadley and all these players, scrambling around to get in players that won't make an awful lot of difference to the squad. And when you're scrambling around on deadline day, it usually means you've done something wrong.
Absolutely. It's a bit scattergun, isn't it, Dave? And in their match against Liverpool at the weekend, they just seem to be crying out for a game changer, almost like Mane and Coutinho. Well, he wasn't against Spurs, but he can be that kind of, you know, match-winning difference. And Liverpool were really all over Spurs. And if it wasn't for Michel Vorm, they might have run up a bit of another kind of big game massacre scoreline like we've seen against Arsenal and Man City recently. What is it that Spurs are missing, and why have they sold guys like Chadley?
Well, I think it's not even, you know, I don't think it's about Chadley. I don't think it's about any of the attacking players. I think it's about Moussa Dembele. I think it's huge. Wanyama and Eric Dier in the first half, were before the injury to Kyle Walker, too similar. They're the same player. They play the role differently. You know, Wanyama's more aggressive. Dier's a better reader of the game. But it's just they're missing it so much. There's a crazy stat that was shooting around Twitter. Since the start of last season, Harry Kane has scored 24 goals in 27 games with Moussa Sissoko starting, and only 1 in 12 without him, which is ridiculous.
Which shows
the impact of Moussa Dembele, but it also opens up space for the likes of Dele Alli, Christian Eriksen and Harry Kane. That was a really good trivium last season. They did still lack someone on the right-hand side. I think Zaha would be a better fit from players like Isco, who have also been linked with Spurs. You know, more direct, more of a natural winger, but still lacks a lot in the final third in terms of decision making. But yeah, it's Moussa Dembele for me, and it goes back to that last game, a game that they bottled it in a way against Chelsea, where they reacted. Dembele does something stupid, and now Spurs are sort of it's hurting them now.
Mo, what have you kind of taken from Tottenham's start to the season? Again, they started slow like they did last year. Did you see hope, or is it like Dave says, is the kind of a big glaring error with their squad building this summer?
I mean, yeah, not signing someone who can do what Dembele does is kind of a huge mistake, really. Being able to carry the ball from mid, I mean, yeah, Dembele can defend and stuff, because so can Wanyama, but being able to carry the ball from midfield, which is what Dembele does best, which is what Spurs and Harry Kane, as Dave said, that yeah, they need that, and so without that was foolish to not try and add that to their squad. What I take from Spurs' start of the season, though, is that Harry Kane just can't score in August. Like, I think he's got like no goals in 12 games in August. You know, the guy just doesn't do it here. He takes a while to get going. Really, what Spurs should have done is just not start him and just giving him August off and just started Vincent Janssen up front. Might have worked out better in their favour, to be honest.
Mo, you're a man who obviously knows a lot about European football, and you do watch many other leagues. A player like Dembele, almost like Kante was for Leicester, they don't come along often, but is there anyone that you would pick out has similar attributes to Dembele that you think Spurs should be making a move on if they can?
It's really difficult, because the thing is, Dembele has the kind of combination of dribbling and physique that you don't normally see that much of, frankly. You know, it's really hard. But I mean, one player that I always thought Spurs should look at, especially now that they have Wanyama and Eric Dier. They could be looking at someone like Isco. I mean, they've said they've been linked with him. That makes a lot of sense. And people would assume it's for the left side of the 4-2-3-1, but I think you could play 4-3-3 with Isco, Dier, and Wanyama in midfield. And I think that would actually be really interesting to watch because Isco, like Dembele, carries the ball brilliantly. And in the Premier League, his technique, he'd just drift away from players. He'd dance away from them. He's exceptional reading the game. He spots passes. And all he needs is just someone to believe, manager to believe in him and to play him every week.
We've seen one Spanish playmaker with wonderful feet who started off in a more attacking role, drop deeper and be a revelation for Arsenal in Santi Cazorla. I mean, Dave, could Isco be that man for Spurs?
No, not at all for me. When Isco's been good, when Isco's been at the top of his game, he's been playing wide, he's been playing in an attacking position. Him deeper doesn't make any sense, especially in the Premier League. Dembele's so good at shielding the ball and rolling off players in deep areas, which gets Spurs out of situations, which again breaks the lines, and you can play that forward pass in between the lines. You know, the only player that would sort of suit him that I can even think of is Mbula. Mm. He's someone like that. Mm. It's like Paul Pogba is the top of that kind of midfielder, then Dembele, and then someone like Mbula, who was doing it for Marseille, struggled at Porto, and has looked all right for Stoke. But he's a similar statistically player, wins tackles, can take people on. But that's the thing in the market. These players are so rare.
I mean, Stoke, is there any logic to Sissoko then? As a kind of, we saw him for France in the Euros. I mean, he's not a perfect example of that kind of player, but he can take people on. He can play more of a box-to-box role at times and also drift out to the flanks as well.
That might be part of the thinking. We saw him play on the right for France and he was pretty impressive. And Pochettino likes his versatility and you can play him in the middle doing almost that Dembele job as well. That might be part of the thinking. It still seems pretty muddled to me. Mm. I think if you want that kind of player, you buy Sissoko in June or whenever you could have bought him for, and then they could have gone for Sadio Mane a long time ago. Mm. They liked Mane, and obviously it was a lot of money, but you see him on Saturday and it was absolutely terrifying, and that's exactly what Spurs are missing.
Mm, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Speaking of terrifying players to now ramp up the threat level of the Premier League, we mentioned Isco there, and also I think someone mentioned James Rodriguez as well. Stobes, you've heard rumours they could be on their way to places, potentially.
Isco, potentially. I mean, a lot of clubs have made inquiries for him, including Tottenham as well. I think it's very unlikely he's going to leave Real Madrid. Likewise, I think it's pretty unlikely that James Rodriguez will leave, but we were talking off air, we were talking about any potential stonkers that could come up on deadline day, and I think potentially one of those two could be on their way to the Premier League. I wouldn't be surprised if one of them happened to move over here.
Yeah, no, I think James makes a lot of sense purely because he's not going to play at Real Madrid. He was usurped first by Lucas Vazquez. Now he's been usurped by Marco Asensio. He's just fallen down the pecking order at Real Madrid.
Where do you think he should go then, ideally?
Man United before they signed all those players.
Another number 10 for Man United?
Well, before they signed.
Chelsea have got loads of money.
Yeah, Chelsea.
They want to spend it.
Chelsea could work, but the thing with Chelsea is, I mean, I still think the biggest thing Conte needs to do there is institute a two-striker system. So I don't know how you fit in a number 10 in there. You know, Arsenal, he's just, you know, wouldn't really fit. The thing is, he doesn't really fit anywhere in the Premier League necessarily, but he's also so talented. I mean, in 2014-15, he played 46 times for Real Madrid. This was his first season coming off that amazing World Cup he had. 46 times, 17 goals, 16 assists. He's so good. It's almost like, okay, fine, you know what? We'll sign him and we'll make room for him somehow and just find a way to play him. And I think maybe a Premier League team should take a chance on that.
I mean, Dave, we saw at the World Cup, James thrived in the hole in like a 4-2-3-1 system, and then he struggled later on when Falcao came back into the Colombia side, and he didn't really fit into a two-striker system. So does that kind of rule out Chelsea? And are there any teams that you see a James-shaped hole waiting to be filled at all?
Yeah, I think there's one team, definitely. I think, Chelsea they should push to play two strikers, like Mo's saying. It doesn't make sense from not doing that. Kante's perfect for two strikers because he does so much work. Don't like him at the base of the midfield. I think he's too poor on the ball, not good enough. But anyway, James could fit in is Juventus or every single day of the week. You know, playing at the tip of a diamond or playing a little bit deeper in midfield and then driving from deep, it'd be perfect for their 3-5-2 or their 4-4-2 diamond. Mm. You know, going back to what Mo said that season, he was directly involved in more goals than any midfielder in Europe's top five leagues. He has the calibre, but he needs to be as a number 10. And unfortunately, that's not going to happen at Real Madrid.
Yeah, and I mean, actually, that makes sense, a lot of sense, because Real Madrid's number 10 shirt is currently vacant.
Ooh. Well, they have been interested in him in the past. But one team we were talking about just there is Chelsea. They've had another quite, how would you put it? They definitely use a loan system very well again this season. If you look at the list of players they've sent out on loan, I mean, I'm struggling to scroll down the page, if I'm honest with you. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 26 players out on loan. I mean, what do we make of this? Is this an abuse of the system, or is this kind of the realities of a super club stockpiling players?
To me, this seems like it just seems like a failed attempt to do what Udinese did so very well for years, which was buy players, a lot of potential players, loan them out to various clubs, develop them, play them, and then sell them off for huge profit. But it just seems like it's not working because they're not making huge profits on these players. They're just sending them out on loan again and again and again. They're either letting them go for free or selling them for like £3 million.
So is it a good model for the players, though? You've seen De Bruyne come in and out of this system. You've seen Lukaku come and go. You've seen players like Ake, who's doing all right in the Premier League, and Christiansen, who's now at Borussia Mönchengladbach. People were touting he could come back and be the next Terry, but he seems pretty dead set on staying there now.
Not necessarily when you look at Patrick Bamford or Gael Kakuta and Josh McEachran and all the other examples of the players that didn't work out. I don't think it suits an 18, 19, 20-year-old to be farmed out on a loan to a completely different club, culture, style of play and manager every single year. And I think it is Chelsea genuinely just using the players as a trading device.
Right.
You know, they get other teams to pay the wages. They sell them on. You only need one or two. And you say they don't make a lot of money, Mo, but you only need one De Bruyne and it pays to buy the rest of them. And I honestly think it's just... You know, it's a trading game for Chelsea. And it's nothing to do with the players.
So is it like
Victor Moses is out of nowhere, come back into the team and he's scoring goals, right?
He always does that in the summer, isn't he? But is it more like treating football and football transfers almost like a buy-to-let scheme?
Yeah, it is. It's in the rules. You're allowed to do it. And I'm surprised no one else has really cottoned onto it. No one else is doing it as well as Chelsea. And it's one of the reasons why Michael Emanalo is so respected by Roman Abramovich, because he's doing a job for him there.
But we've seen Conte be... kind of expected to use the youth more of the academy system. Is that model, making it more difficult for the first team manager to really, bring you through, or is that a kind of a bit of an excuse for them not to do it?
I think the managers who mean it when they say they have faith in youth, they want to keep the players close to them.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a really good 20-year-old, 21-year-old, you want them training with the first team squad, you want to be coaching them on the training ground every day. You know, that's why Ruben Loftus-Cheek hasn't gone on loan. That's why Maurizio Pochettino at Tottenham, the ones he likes stay, and he ships out on loan the ones he doesn't like. And I think that's when you know with the young players.
Across the other side of London, we've got Arsenal, who finally look like they finally got themselves together a little bit. They've signed Lucas Perez, and apparently Mustafi is very close to being done. It probably will be done by the time this podcast goes out. Dave, will they fill in the gaps of Arsenal's team, and will they kind of help Wenger to potentially finish his Arsenal career on a high this season, or is this still... there's still gaps to be filled in that side?
I think they're both very good signings, but they're not signings at a level that are going to take Arsenal to win the Premier League this season. If they made these signings last season, you'd have looked at it in a different light and they probably would have gone on to win the Premier League. You know, Mustafi's a massive upgrade on what they've had before. You know, look at Mertesacker, Gabriel. Holding's come in and done very well. He's been impressive, and it's a bit of a shame that now Mustafi's come in, because this 20-year-old English player is not going to be playing week in, week out. But Mustafi, Koscielny, it's going to be a wonderful partnership. Koscielny, the best defender, central defender in the Premier League for me. Since he's come back, he's just looked brilliant. So I think, you know, he can carry Mustafi for the first few weeks, and then he'll get adjusted and it'll be the Mustafi we saw for Germany at the Euros. Very calm, very composed. Who can nick a goal from a set piece. So he's a quality player. Perez, you know, a tricky forward, a forward that's been carrying Deportivo the last few seasons. So again, a good player, but is it as Zlatan? I think that's how you look at it this season in the Premier League, that you need these players. You need a De Aguero, you need a Zlatan, you need a Griezmann, you need a Higuain. So yeah, it's a good signing, but it's just going to be another top four for Arsenal for me this season.
I think Mustafi is absolutely fantastic. Lucas Perez is kind of that's just sort of an admission that Theo Walcott hasn't panned out, basically, because Lucas Perez is what Theo Walcott should be. He's a winger who can play up front and scores goals and occasionally makes them. Plays brilliant on the counter-attack, doesn't really do so much in other situations. I mean, it's literally, and you think he's the same age as Walcott as well, it's literally just, okay, you were rubbish, Walcott. I'm just going to sign someone who basically is what you should have turned out to be. Can Lucas Perez do it in the Premier League? I don't know. I mean, I hope he can, because I like the guy, and he played very well for Deportivo last year. Mustafi is genius. It's a brilliant bit of signing. This is the best defensive signing they've made since Sol Campbell. I mean...
ooh, that's a big shout.
Mustafi's... look, man, Nico Otamendi came to Man City with his reputation of being this world-class defender. When he's very talented, but he's kind of an idiot. And the reason he looks so good for Valencia is because Mustafi was holding his leash. And now Mustafi's coming. Arsenal need a defensive organiser. They need a defensive leader that isn't Per Mertesacker. And now they've finally got one. I mean, Mustafi, in La Liga last year, 1.71 tackles per 1 per 90. That's more than any any Arsenal player. 73% aerial duels won per 90. That's more than anyone except Mertesacker, who can't move for more than 5 miles an hour. So, you know, we know that. 4.46 interceptions per 90. That's more than any Arsenal defender. And then 5.64 clearances per 90, which is below Koscielny and Gabriel, but enormous. One defensive error in the entire thing. Others, all the Arsenal defenders made at least two. He's just absolutely brilliant. He's so perfectly attuned to what Arsenal need. And I think Dad's right. Koscielny will give him a little bit of a hand at the start of the season, right? He'll give him a little bit. But once he gets settled, he's absolutely the perfect signing. Arsenal have needed this guy for years. They've finally got him. Arsene Wenger, I mean, he's left it very, very late, but he's really done well here.
For 35 million, presumably Wenger agrees with you. I think there is some concern among the coaching staff there about his height, because him and Koscielny together, I think Mustafi's 6 foot pretty much exactly. Him and Koscielny together, you come up against an Andy Carroll or a Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and could, or, you know, Sepp Peters could have a bit of trouble there.
Mm. And the what is a player, I guess, going out to maybe make room for Mustafi as well in Chambers. He's going to go out on loan. I don't quite think we know entirely where yet, but it's probably going to be Middlesbrough by the sounds of it.
It's almost certainly Middlesbrough, yeah. They've told him that he can play at centre-back, which is the position that he wants to play in, position Wenger's told him he sees his future at. Arsenal didn't want to sell.
You know what? I bet you if any Eto'o Karanka can get him to play at centre-back. Eto'o Karanka was a fierce defender. I bet you he can get him to do it. Arsene Wenger doesn't develop talent anymore, hasn't done it for years.
One thing I would say on Chambers, I mean, Wenger now wants to be a centre-back. When he arrived, Wenger said, I see his future in defence midfield. Then he played him at right-back quite a lot. We're going to get onto Jack Wilshere later and the vagaries of Wenger moving young talents around to different positions. But do you think Chambers has kind of lost a bit of his luster when he first arrived at Arsenal?
A little bit. When he first started, Arsenal fans were really impressed with him, and they were dreading seeing his name on the team sheet when they played against Liverpool first day of the season. He lost his confidence, didn't he? Had a couple of really bad performances, and he's always coming in when Arsenal are in crisis. Yeah. They've got an injury crisis, throwing Callum Chambers. It's not ideal for. He's only 21, remember, and they paid £16 million for him a couple of years ago. So obviously Wenger saw the potential there. He needs to be playing every week. You don't want a situation where you end up with a Jack Wilshere or Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain where he's in his mid-20s and he's barely played any football. So I think it's a really good move for him.
Fantastic. We will get onto Jack Wilshere a bit later on. But just finally to kind of round up this transfer segment, it is, as I say, deadline day eve. So we're all waiting to see what transfer Santa brings us in the end. But are there any other clubs that you see outside the top four that we haven't already mentioned, Stobes, that are going to be busy? I mean, West Ham, Southampton, Crystal Palace, they all seem to be active in one way or another at the moment.
Yeah, there's lots going on. I mean, you wouldn't believe how much the phones are on fire at the moment. I think West Ham, they're all right. I think they're pretty much done. For example, with Jack Wilshere, they're briefing that they've got no interest at all whatsoever in him. It's going to be a busy one. You see, you know, the likes of Middlesbrough, I think they've already signed 10 or 11 players this summer. I think you're just going to see some panicking. I think Tottenham are panicking. Stoke, certainly, they're going to throw some money at a centre-back as well. Hull are absolutely desperate. It looks like Abel Hernandez is going to Aston Villa potentially as well, and they've hardly got any players anyway, and they're phoning every agent they know saying, what have you got for us? I think they're going to sign Ryan Mason, but I think you're looking at the mid-table to lower league clubs really spending everything they've got.
How have Chelsea not signed anyone? I mean, they've only signed Kante, and Kante's really great, and okay, they're going to Batshuayi, okay, fine, but they need like at least two centre-backs, right? Yeah. And a left-back. What are they waiting for?
Dave, they potentially solved two of those positions, so you can play both positions. Alonso, you can play left back and centre back. I know you're a big fan of his.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, the Alonso we saw at Sunderland was a young player, and he's really matured at Fiorentina. You know, he's a very flexible player, can play left back, left midfield, left wing back, but can cover at centre back. He has played at centre back for Fiorentina this season. He's just a good player. I just really like him. He's got a great drive, he's got great height, you know, good at winning the ball, and he's pretty dangerous from set pieces, scored a number of pretty decent free kicks from far out, and I just feel he's a Premier League player. He's a player that has played in the Premier League before, has the experience, and it's got something to prove as well. You know, a lot of Premier League fans, when you mention his name, it was rubbish. So he's got something to prove, and he's improved massively. So for me, it's the right time for him, especially under Conte.
And people kind of think of his Bolton spell as well.
Yeah, you know, his Bolton spell, his Sunderland spell wasn't great in either, but it was playing in poor sides, playing in sides that were relegation fodder. So I think he's going to come back and he'll do well.
Yeah, I mean, this guy came out of Real Madrid Youth Academy. He's a talented footballer. He just needs a chance.
And going the other way to Italy from the Premier League is, of course, Joe Hart, who's gone to Torino. I mean, who saw that coming? We thought he might be going to somewhere like Sunderland because they've got a bit of a goalkeeping crisis now, Stobes.
Well, he apparently said he had no interest in going to Sunderland in the end. And it says a lot that he didn't have any other options. Everton pulled out, so it was Sunderland or Torino in the end, which is absolutely crazy when you're thinking about the England number one goalkeeper. I mean, I think we all thought Pep Guardiola might push him out the door, but to do it so quickly and so brutally, and to leave him basically with no option, he got left with pretty much no option other than to go to Torino. Really interesting move for him. Looking forward to seeing how he gets on there, but do feel a bit sorry for him because he really pushed out the door.
They're a bigger team, right? Seven league
more
titles.
History, yeah. Ooh,
how many have City won? Only four.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't surprised by Guardiola's efficiency with doing that. When he first showed up in Barcelona, this guy never coached any major team before. He was like, right, Ronaldinho, Deco, out the door, mate. You know, I mean, he knows what he needs. He knows what he wants. And Joe Hart failed to show the requisite technique to control the ball with his feet, and he had to go.
I think it's an interesting one. You know, Ronaldinho, Deco. I think there were players that needed to be booted out the dressing room because they were terrible influences, partying, getting drunk, not turning up to training. Whereas Joe Hart's a different one. He's sort of showing his authority. I think he came over to the Premier League and was like, right, who's someone that potentially we could get rid of that's potentially a leader in this team, which one asserts my authority, and two, you know, is an improvement. Joe Hart potentially has a weakness down to his left from outside the box. He's got a terrible save percentage from that, as you know, ranked in the bottom three into it from the last three seasons. So it's one of those things where technically, in terms of ball at his feet, needs a lot of work, has a potential weakness, let's get another keeper.
I mean, it's almost a bit like what Mourinho did with Mata, maybe, when he came to Chelsea.
Yeah, I think it's what Mourinho did with Mata, what Mourinho's done before. I think that Guardiola may have learnt that he may need to do this to assert himself at a club. So it's an interesting one. You know, Guardiola potentially getting rid of Bastian Schweinsteiger when he went there, you know, playing him less and less and less, a less influence on the dressing room. Mourinho's done the same to Schweinsteiger United. So I think it's just big managers need this. They need control.
Poor Schweinsteiger.
Although, as Stove said in the last pod, maybe it wasn't just Mourinho that wasn't entirely impressed with him recently and his attitude. I mean, have we heard any reports that, you know, he's saying all the right things in the press, isn't he? Schweinsteiger about supporting the team and all that. But is he a little bit of an outcast in the dressing room, do you think?
Yeah, I think so, a little bit. I mean, there was a report actually after we did that about some of the players apparently told him to stop watching Anna Ivanovic playing tennis, didn't they? Just after we talked about that. Look, I think he's quite happy on his salary, to be honest. No one else is going to pay Bastian Schweinsteiger £200,000 a week, so he's going to stay.
Fair enough.
Why wouldn't you?
We just talked there about some big managers with big personalities coming into big clubs there. I mean, on the international scene, are there many bigger clubs than England? And Big Sam has arrived. He's made his presence known. He sent a lovely letter to journalists, actually, saying that we're all along for the same ride and we're going to build this journey together and we're going to get England to the World Cup and all these kind of like lovely notions of, you know, unity and brotherhood and all those kind of things. What are our first impressions of Sam, Big Sam Allardyce? Dave, what have you been thinking?
That's not the Big Sam we love. That's not the Big Sam that we've developed an affection for. The Big Sam that built Bolton into a northern powerhouse with JJ Okocha, Kevin Davis and Ivan Campo. It's just different. It's completely different. I feel like he's going too far to appease people. Ooh. And that's not what Big Sam should do. Big Sam should go in there and say, you're not good enough. I'm going to get rid of you. I want a defensive midfielder. I want a big target man. I want to play off that. I want to change England's style and be ballsy. Because if he's going to go down the line of playing how England have played over the last few seasons with Roy Hodgson, who again did his best work playing on the counter-attack with Fulham, what's the point of having Big Sam? Because it's useless.
Yeah, look, I mean, my reaction to this is it's like a joke. It's like a meme that's come to life and, you know, it's grown out of control. I mean, the guy's called Big Sam. You know,
why
is he managing England? What is this? This is like when everyone voted for Boris Johnson to be London mayor just because it would be, sounds like a laugh. Let's do that. It's a terrible idea. This is a terrible idea. What is going on? He's not going to come in and play his style of football. There's no Mark Noble. There's no Jermaine Defoe. Andy Carroll's not playing, but there's not even like Conor Wickham or something like budget Andy Carroll. Yeah, he's not playing his own style of football. He's not picked Scott Dan, for crying out loud. You know, this guy is coming. He's just basically picked the same England squad as before, except he's put Mikel Antonio in it. There's no vision. He's not built for the future. You need to be building for 2018. Where's Rashford? Where's Barkley, Townsend, Redmond? Where's Jack freaking Wilshere? You know, he's got Gary Cahill, Phil Jagielka, Wayne Rooney. These guys aren't going to be relevant. They're barely relevant now. They're not going to be relevant in 2 years. What's he doing?
I mean, Stobes, I'm hoping we might see a bit of pro-Sam from you very shortly, but Portugal just won the Euros with a lot of older players in their team, kind of tacticking their way through, not always playing the best football, but, you know, just organising themselves and playing to a plan. I mean, can Big Sam can he turn England into Portugal 2016?
No, I don't think we've ever seen Sam Allardyce show that kind of tactical understanding. Let's be honest. He's good at getting a team to finish 17th in the Premier League, and that's about it. He's never
qualified for Europe with Bolton. Bolton, for crying out loud.
But if you're talking about international football, you're talking about knockout competition. I can't think the furthest he got in an FA Cup or a League Cup.
Gary Megson drew in the Allianz Arena in the UEFA Cup knockout rounds with Bolton. Yeah, Big Sam never did anything anywhere like that in knockout football.
Sam, that wasn't his job. His job was to stay in the Premier League.
Yeah, Big Sam was great 10 years ago when he managed to convince a couple of European Cup winners to come and play for his club. There aren't European Cup winners that can play for England right now, except Wayne Rooney, who's just...
And he's missed the trick with Wayne Rooney, because you're talking about Sam Allardyce stamping his authority, making a mark.
Yeah.
He could have changed the captain as well. Yeah. What an opportunity to choose his own captain. I know there aren't too many alternatives, but the thought of Wayne Rooney playing 90 minutes every single England game for the next 2 years terrifies me.
But maybe he plans to motivate Wayne Rooney to a whole new level of ability for England, because as we've heard, he has brought Paddy McGuinness and Bradley Walsh, who, let's not forget, played one of the assistants to Mike Bassett in the Mike Bassett film, into the England camp. I mean, it's better than Glenn Hoddle's Faith Healers, isn't it,
man? It's like I told you, it's a meme come to life. It can only be better than we expect it to be, because it can't be as bad as it looks like it's going to be. It just can't be. This looks to be, on every level, every conceivable level, an absolute disaster. This is like... You know, if Spain had appointed Javier Clemente, who's a backwards anti-football, demagogue, it would have been better than this decision, because at least Clemente's good at his job. You know, Argentina have appointed Edgardo Bauza, another anti-football king. At least he's good at his job. He's won things. This is just absolutely despicable. I can't believe what England have done here, honestly.
Dave, just on the point we said earlier, there are no European Cup winners to call up, but Big Sam is very happy to go out there and ask non-English players to come and join. I mean, Stephen Nzonzi, who is now a very big force to be reckoned with at Sevilla in midfield, used to play for Stoke City. I mean, he was mentioned. He didn't quite fancy it, but he was mentioned. Well, are there any non-English players that you would like to see Big Sam kind of...
I think Big Sam's looked at the squad and been like, we've got three central midfielders that just play the same role. We need Stephen Nzonzi that's going to hold for us. We need a bit of physicality in there. What's going on, lads? But it's an interesting one. It opens up criticism if he did do that, if he did nationalise players. But I quite like that. You know, we see Italy have done it quite well over the years. Spain have done it over the years. I'm not averse to that. Why not? We're in a multicultural society. Why not bring in these players in? If they're eligible for England and they're good enough and they can play Big Sam Allardyce football, I am cool with that. But my big question is, where's Troy Deeney? We were speaking about captains before. Troy Deeney, Watford captain, won 231 aerial duels last season, more than any other player. Why is he not even in the squad? There's one player that would suit Sam Allardyce's football.
Yeah, he would suit Allardyce.
Technically is actually a pretty decent player.
Yeah.
That you could play someone off him, or you play a Kevin Nolan in behind, who we need to still find someone that can get into the penalty area and attack the ball. But we need this, and I think this is the thing. We need to focus on what Big Sam did well. And, you know, he was one of the first managers that got into analytics. That's why he was ahead of the game, because he knew where to put Kevin Nolan, because he saw, you know, you put two of your central midfielders in this position. If you play a long ball, 50% of the time we'll win it, or 70% of the time we'll win this second ball. I don't mind if that's going to be England, but he needs to do what he's good at, and that's what he's good at.
Pomo,
never been relegated. Never been relegated. Anti-football manager, but never been relegated. You know, I'd rather have that in an international competition than someone that's got nothing. Sam Allardyce would have defended that long throw that England conceded against Iceland that ultimately cost them the game. He would have had the players put in the right position. He would have probably utilised the long throw as well. Again, a lot of teams would have struggled with that. We saw Iceland's progression with that. So it's the thing where, stick to what you know, Sam. Don't bother appeasing people.
So less tick-attacker, more, was it called POMO in Big Sam talk? Position of maximum opportunity.
But this is the problem, right? Big Sam's a self-identified pragmatist, okay? He's not, as weird as it sounds to say, because of how distinct his style was. You know, he basically flat out rejected the idea of a Big Sam style in the press conference. His ego is bigger than his ambition, and his desire to be seen as, I can play your good football too, It's gonna hold him back. Like Dave says, if if England played Big Troy Deeney or Andy Carroll up front and Mark Noble in midfield, and really, you know, that would actually have stand a better chance of working than what he's doing right now.
Yeah, you're right, Mo. I mean, this is a guy who bored West Ham fans to death by the end, but he's been telling us for 10 years that he could manage Real Madrid or Barcelona and win absolutely everything, and presumably he wouldn't have gone to Barcelona and played long ball football. So I think England, it's going to be a bit more of the same. It's going to be Hudson-esque.
You don't think Aladici's going to have his time to shine?
No, and I think he's going to... I know we mock the Bradley Walsh and Paddy McGuinness thing, but I think he's going to try and create that spirit. You know, you saw Portugal's spirit, you saw the Wales team spirit, Iceland. Mm. I think he's going to go big on the mental stuff, the team spirit kind of stuff, and try and get through that way.
Well, there is the Slovakia game coming up, which is what the squad has been picked for. And what are we expecting from Big Sam's first game? Stopes?
I have no idea what to expect because, you know, you look at the players in the squad and a lot of them aren't playing very well for their clubs. I mean, he's overlooked a couple of who should be in there, Ross Barkley, Marcus Rashford, and then he's picking players who, you know, he's not picking players on form. I know we're only 3 weeks into the season, but on current form, Dele Alli, Harry Kane would be nowhere near the squad. They've been awful the first few weeks of the season, and that's why I'm worried it's going to be a Hodgson-esque. I mean, qualifying is never going to be a problem, is it? Slovakia, Slovenia, Lithuania, Scotland, it's not a problem at all. But I think it's going to be quite a Hodgson-esque kind of performance against Slovakia.
Dave, just a word on Rashford. Sam actually defended his decision not to call up to the senior squad, saying that playing under 21 football is a great experience for a player of his age. And, you know, is there an argument there that we sometimes rush young players in this country and that maybe Rashford is probably better off in the under-21s?
On a personal perspective, I'd rather him not play for England at all in terms of, you know, game time, having a bit of a rest. But
are you wearing red today?
No, definitely not, Greg. Not after that Torino gag either.
No,
I think that it needs to be seen as some young players do need to have a little bit, you know, less football and take their time because they get burned out. We've seen it with so many players that they hit 30 or hit 32 and that's them done and that's them over.
Well, I mean, speaking of players, young players and burnout, we're going to have to move to Jack Wilshere just for the... because we are running out of time, so we're going to have to finish off our pod by talking about the man, the myth, that guy who did that wonderful thing against Barcelona that night at the Camp Nou. It's Jack Wilshere.
Is it the Emirates, actually?
I can't... That's how memorable he's got.
Arsenal didn't have a single shot at the Camp Nou and somehow lost and decided to blame the referee anyway. It was pretty embarrassing.
But at the Emirates.
At the Emirates, yeah.
Absolutely. Jack Wilshere, what's happened, Stobes?
Well, he's nowhere near the team at the moment, is he? You've got Granit Xhaka's come in, Santi Cazorla, Elneny's ahead of him. Who else have they got? Aaron Ramsey's ahead of him.
Coquelin is, frankly.
Francis Coquelin's ahead of him. So you're looking at being sixth choice.
Mm.
If he does play, he's going to be stuck out on the right wing, probably. Even then, he's third or fourth choice for that position. So, frankly, he's not going to play. His injury record's terrible. Maybe he needs to get, you know, frankly, maybe he needs to get away from Arsenal's medical team a little bit and their fitness staff and actually be trained by someone who's going to maybe a new schedule, look after him, a change of scenery.
Mm.
Arsene Wenger's basically said you can go on loan for a year. It sounds like there won't be a break clause, so it's not even going to be one of those, look, go away for a couple of months, then come back when you're fit and you're playing every week. Yeah. It sounds like he's going to go away for a full season. He can take his pick. Every Premier League club, well, beyond the obvious, you know, Tottenham, Man United, Man City, most of the Premier League clubs would take him. I think I'd like to see him go abroad, show a bit of ambition. We've seen Joe Hart going to Torino. I think Jack Wilshere playing at a club like Valencia or Roma would be a really ambitious move, and hopefully kickstart his career again because he's 24 now. Like you said, we've been talking for 4 or 5 years about how talented he is, but we haven't seen it.
And there are also rumours of him maybe potentially going to Juventus as well. But just quickly, Dave, on his actual injury record, how Wilshere plays, he's often said that he kind of leaves a bit of himself too open for in the duels when people come out, and he kind of shows a bit too much of himself and he gets caught in the tackle. But that does bring rewards, doesn't it, with taking players on with the ball. And if you do win those kind of battles, you can kind of lead him to eat dust.
I think technically he just needs to work out when he has taken a bad touch, not to overstretch and get out the tackle, and then don't look to draw fouls. That's one of the big things with him. When he tries to wriggle out these situations, it's always the collision, and he needs to start to avoid that. You know, you look at the last 5 Premier League seasons, out of a possible 190 games, he's only played 28 full games, which is just not good enough. But has changed the script, right? So I'd say Jack Wilshere going to Juventus. If I was his agent, this would be my sales pitch, right? So you knock on the door. All right, chaps, how's it going? So I've seen you stacked in midfield. Pjanic, Kadira, Lamela, Asamoah, Hernanez, Sciuraro, Marchisio. But what are you missing? You lost Paul Pogba last year, didn't you, lads? What did Paul Pogba do for you? Drove through midfield, got into the final third, combined with Dybala and Mandzukic. That's what Jack Wilshere can do for you. Pick the ball up, add a bit of a tempo into the attack, really get you going. And I do feel that the speed of the league will suit Jack Wilshere. Italy is more of a tactical league. You're going to have less rough tackles, less people getting into your face. It's going to be more disciplined and tactical. So, Jack is your man.
No. Serie A, less better for him. Do you remember Ronaldo? Do you remember what happened to that guy? The guy went to Serie A, got absolutely beat to pieces. Broken forever, almost, really, you could argue. No. He needs to go to La Liga. He should probably play for Granada under Paco Gemez, play in that midfield with Sergi Samper. Really just lovely weather down there in Andalusia. Great, you know, great culture. Paco Gemez is a genius. We'll teach him things in 1 year. Arsenal couldn't teach him in 10. he'll come back to England a much, much better player. And Arsene Wenger will be gone from Arsenal. So, you know, it's win-win for Jack Wilshere, because really that man stagnated the life out of his career.
Mo, I did want to ask. So we often talk about Jack Wilshere as a continental footballer in the most British sense possible. I mean, yeah. Does that still fit the profile of the player that he is today? Do you think he is still a Spanish player in English clothes?
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the man, he's technically fantastic. His vision is superb. He carries the ball really well. His only problem is that he's playing in a team that doesn't have a role for him, doesn't understand how to use him, and for some reason is obsessed with playing 4-2-3-1. Jack Wilshere is a 4-3-3 midfielder, and he needs to play in a technical... The kind of... See, Arsene Wenger can't make his mind up what kind of side he wants to build, and the kind of side Jack Wilshere belongs to is the one that was built around Cesc Fabregas. And when Cesc left, Wenger got so upset and hurt about it that he just basically abandoned the whole thing and started to build this weird sort of counter-attacky team with around Alexis and Ozil. Wilshere needs to be in a team that plays passing football, that doesn't constantly expose him to having to run around and jump into these tackles, like Dave says. That a team that dominates possession, but, you know, that does so with a solidity and a sort of energy about them. I think Paco Gemes would be really good. Valencia is a nice idea, but Valencia are a disaster right now. Sevilla could be good, you know, although they've signed about 10 million midfielders. Hell, go to Barcelona and just sit on the bench for a year and just learn from those players. You know, just something like that. He just needs to go where he'll be played and trusted, and he could do so well. He's got so much talent.
So we've got Italy, we've got Spain. So what do you make of Wilshere, where he's at and where he needs to go?
I think he needs to get out of England, and it's not just on the pitch as well, it's off the pitch. I mean, he has been in a few scrapes, hasn't he? He's been in a bit of trouble. Maybe a new, you know, lifestyle-wise, he's got a young family. Maybe to get abroad and settle down and restart would probably be the best thing for him. I think La Liga would suit him. I think, like Mo says and Dave says, he's a technical player. He carries the ball. A full season, I think. He needs to know he's playing every week. The problem if you go to Juventus and you're not in a team and it turns into a disaster. Mm. He could actually, you know, if you're talking about playing at Juve, he could actually go light for light for Pogba, assuming they don't get Matuidi, just play on that inside left in a three, almost perfect. But he needs to know he's playing every week. He needs a full injury-free 35-odd game season and to start again and then go back to Arsenal and show he can do it there too.
Fantastic. Well, that is the end of today's Squawker Talker podcast. Dave, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, if Jack Walsh is listening as well, I'm happy to represent him over in Turin. Seal the deal.
How's your Italian?
Good.
Go on, give us a blast.
Buongiorno.
Fantastic. Excellent.
His agent's actually Terry Byrne, Beckham's old agent.
Oh, well, you know, if you want something new.
If you want stats, come today. Mo, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to have you on. And Stobes, once again, thank you for your insights, knowledge and company, I guess.
Cheers, mate.
No problem. Get on squawker.com, check out all our analysis, videos, articles of many other varieties, and also follow us on Twitter, and you can also find our pages on Facebook. Thanks for joining us, and see you soon.